Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Just gone 7:22 Central African time, and that time of the morning where we join our very own Adam Kamda, the man who looks at the ocean when it's in motion, who dreams of the ocean when he's dreaming, and who knows the ocean. Just by breathing, he'll tell you exactly what fish is in the shoya. He'll tell you that, Shafat, there's a rock art in that, under that rock. Adam Kamda, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful Ramadan morning?
Wa alaikum salam, Shafat. Salams to you and the listeners. Yes, lovely chilly morning on the Durban beachfront. I'm not at the seaside this morning. I'm staying a little inland. But I can imagine that the promenade will be a little deserted today, Shafat, because of the light rain we have. But the surfers, the diehards, will still be out there on the surf. I've seen some photos of snow that's come through on parts of the berg. So that's what's giving us the chill in the air. And the forecast is for light rain the whole day today, some rain tomorrow. And we can expect the skies to start clearing from Tuesday. But the chill will still remain for the rest of the week, Shafat. And this is perfect weather setting us up for the sardine run.
I tell you, chill in the air, every sight and every sound. I tell you, Adam. And then let's talk about it, Adam. I'm sure when you talk about the chill in the air, what about those gudris, those big gudris from India, or the godras? Do you have them?
Yes, Shafad, you're talking about the tolerance of the cold by the Durbanites. I started seeing some photos on Facebook with people wearing socks and sandals, and they say, you know what, Durban is breaking out the winter gear, Shafad.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that from India. You know, many years ago, I think you missed that cutoff line when they used to come in the Kampala and they used to come in the Karanjas. And, Aldous used to bring in a lot of these India carom boards and, you know, I don't know what and what. But one of the things that they brought was these special godras, or, you know, these because these duvets are nothing. Those things really weighed a ton. And when you got under that, Adam, nothing could touch you. The coldest of day, you didn't even need the heater, Adam.
Yes, I remember that fondly, Shafat. In fact, my one auntie used to make these gudris, and quite prized possessions. And as you rightly said, once you tuck yourself under that, it's warm heaven, and you just end up snoozing the whole night through, and don't feel any bit of cold, Shafat.
I tell you, Adam, when you come, you liar. You make the airwaves jump. Yeah, forget the other waves that's jumping in the Indian Ocean. But when you come on, people are there. And they say, Assalamu alaikum, Adam Kamda. Lovely to have you on Marcus Sahaba, the voice of the Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. I want to know why they catch monster fish in the Orange River. Are they really big, almost the size of adult? I didn't know that they have a monster fish in Orange River, Adam.
Yes, Shafat, I'm not too familiar with fishing in that area, but I would assume that because it's such a huge river system and established over so many decades, even centuries, you know, you would have a large fish, a fish that can survive for very long times and, in fact, growing to these humongous sizes. That reminds me also of the Nile River, Shafat. You know, you get the Nile perch, and it is also sought after. I've seen videos of people targeting Nile perch in the same manner that we do game fishing in Durban, you know, where you use a rapala and you troll it off the back of a boat. And these guys use very basic style boats with small engines, and they troll these lures. And I even saw them hooking one and straightening the hooks, Shafat. So you can imagine the similar kind of experience on the Orange River, where you would find these monsters off the river. And as you know, Shafat, fishermen will target fish wherever there's water, if it's a river or a dam or a stream or the ocean or an estuary. Whenever we see a body of water and we can picture these fish swimming below the surface, we'll always look for some sort of tackle to try our luck and throw some bait in and hope to entice and enjoy a good fight with these fish, Shafat.
You know, Adam, we are blessed in South Africa. We have so many, you know, we got a long ocean, and we have so many estuaries and the river mouths and all that. And, you know, fish come to spawn there and so forth. We have salmons and so forth. You know, Do we have the expertise to look after the ecology of these estuaries and these beautiful shorelines that we have? Because, you know, lots of people are complaining that it's being polluted, that glass is being broken and thrown into these places, and, different types of pollution taking place. Your thoughts are there, Adam?
You know, Shafat, I think we are failing dismally in terms of pollution because every time it rains, typical example, Shafat, would be the Amgeni River mouth. You'd see a whole lot of litter and plastic and debris that's washed out, and it ends up getting deposited along the riverbank, the mouth of the Amgeni River, and even along the Durban's Golden Mile. Another example, Shafat, would be the St. Lucia estuary. I remember from my young days, it used to be such an amazing trip to drive up to St. Lucia, to be able to drive onto the beach with all your tackle and go and target salmon, and there used to be a grunter run. All the fish used to come and spawn in the estuary. The problem with St. Lucia, Shafad, it happened over many decades. I think there were complications with allowing cane farming along the banks, which used up a lot of the water, caused the estuary to silt up, and the mouth eventually closed. So the mouth being closed also closes off the ocean, for the spawning to continue to take place. Then recently, the mouth had been breached, but the water didn't flow in as people expected because everything is silted up. So it's a very, very complex problem, and you need, really expert scientists to study and to make long-term policy decisions of how the water needs to be used and how the mouths need to be maintained, whether they are allowed to close and open naturally or whether they need some human intervention to assist, because it's the humans that have caused the problem in the first place with over-farming, et cetera, on the banks. So sometimes you do need human intervention to open the mouth. But there's a lot of there's two sides. A lot of people are for it. A lot of people are against it. So you do need, as I said, scientific research and people who know what they're doing. My personal opinion, Shafat, is that we are extremely lacking in our management of our rivers, estuaries, and resources.
No, Adam, what you're talking about, think about, it's a Pingo Beach, they call that area Crab City. It was actually land claimed from the river. They put sand and pylons and they've taken that place away. And I'm sure that affected the estuary. And, river mouth, estuary there, or they called it the Delta, was one of the best, in KZN. And slowly but surely, and now and then, I'm only living 30 seconds away from that area or the mouth there. And now and then you'll see the blue crane coming in or the fish eagle, the bee. And there's a small area that is so tranquil, so peaceful, and so ecological. Your thoughts on that, Adam?
Yes, Shafar, this is sort of like a mangrove area, and it's really a breeding ground for a lot of organisms that seek refuge from the ocean. They come and spawn there, and then they move back out into the ocean. The young ones can have a chance to grow up before being preyed upon by predators, and they're big enough to fend for themselves, and then they move off to sea, and the cycle continues. But as you rightly mentioned, there's been a land reclamation, and they've built houses in that area. So the mangrove area has been reduced. And then you have the problem of pollution where there's industries upstream. And from time to time, we actually see dark-colored inks coming through into the ocean. And that is such an ugly sight to see. The mouth's been closed mostly. They've got a pipe that runs from the estuary to the sea, which does give the estuary some sort of breathing room. But it's not quite the same as being completely open. And I remember it being pristine as a little kid. I used to go and play in that area, and you used to see crabs, you used to see fish jumping in the estuary. There were abundance of birds. And in recent years, with the pollution coming through, it was a sad sight to see fish floating dead in the estuary. And that is a really strong indication that things are not right in the estuary. There's not enough oxygen for the fish. There's too much of pollutants. So there again, you know, authorities need to reach out to the scientific community to study these areas, to find the culprits who are polluting, and, you know, even to educate communities that live along the riverbanks upstream that the pollution is actually killing the ocean, Shafat.
You know, you make a lot of sense. And I remember as a young, I must have been 5 or 6 years old, my dad, my late dad, Phyllis covered with Noor. He was, he passed away at the young age of 35. But he used to put me on his back and swim through that river mouth, that estuary. And it was like, a beautiful sight. And those memories still live in my mind. And as I grew up, I used to go there quite often and really enjoy that and find all the cha-chas in the morning there at the beach, you know, in the Bermudas, enjoying the even icy weather like this, Adam. They were there, dipping into the water and coming out and saying, hey, you know how healthy this is, and they're shivering. But anyway, we had all those lovely moments coming through. And I want to know about, there's this culture of people throwing fish around on and just leaving them on the seashores if they're undersized and that. If you see anyone doing that, Adam, do you go up to them and say, please stop this? This is not the right thing to do. And as you said, you need to educate people. Will you do that, Adam?
You know, Shafat, sometimes fishermen pull out fish from the ocean like tobies or small sharks, etc., and they know they're not going to consume them. I cannot for the life of me understand why they would keep it on the shore and let it die a miserable death and just dry up in the sun, because it's not even the birds that will come and prey on them. They just end up rotting there. And, you know, Shafat, personally, those are the lowest levels of fishermen. But I'm happy to say that the direction is changing through social media, people educating each other. There's a lot more conservation ethos. People are wasting less. When they cut up bait, they don't leave it lying around. They throw it into the ocean. If they catch undersized fish, they try and return them, unharmed to the ocean. And that's how it should be. Even if it's an inedible fish like a toby, I think fishermen get frustrated because when they catch a toby and release it, it tends to bite the line again. But there's usually a shoal of them, and so it's not the same one that's coming out each time. So the idea is to return them back to the water. And if you're only catching tobies in that area, then just move up the coast or down the coast, maybe say 50 meters or 100 meters, and you can target different species. But that practice is slowly coming to an end, and I'm happy to say that there's lots of education, and even a lot of the guys fishing for sport and catching legal sized fish that you're able to take home, they are releasing many of them and just taking the ones that they really want, just one or two for the pot, and releasing all the others just for the sport of fishing, Shafat.
Looking at this message on the screen, he says, Chef and Adam, you guys are something else. Y'all should do joint lectures together. Hey? No, the professor is that Adam. He wants to know, Adam, do they still have pink prawns and pink salmon at the Rivermouth estuary? I moved away 30 years ago. But when I was there, we used to catch pink prawns and pink salmon. I never knew about that, Adam.
You know, Shafat, it comes down to the health of the system. And I would imagine the Sepingo Rivermouth area would have been almost an exact carbon copy of the St. Lucia estuary. And they were so well known for the salmon run and the grunter run. And then you would get prawns and shrimps living in that estuary as well. There used to be ginger shrimps living in the Sepingo Beach estuary. And I'm sure when the mouth was open in the olden days, in the pristine times, there were lots of salmon coming into spawn. You'd find the pink prawns, you'd find the ginger shrimps, etc. And I'm sure even lots of grunters used to come into that estuary. But off late, there isn't really that much life. You'd find still surviving in that environment, river snapper and mullet, Shafat. Mullet are quite hardy, and those are the guys that are still surviving.
A very interesting question here from Hassan. He says, Assalamu alaikum. Dear Adam, is it okay for us to eat harbour fish now, since all the sewage is really being dumped there? And I can tell you it's still smelly. How do you respond to Hassan, Adam?
You know, Shafar, this is such a sore point. You know, when the pumps don't work and the raw sewage, you know, gets washed into the harbor, it really, really is bad. You know, the harbor has got such a huge capacity to filter water, and if there is a spillage, it's virtually unnoticeable. But the volume of all this muck that's coming through is so overpowering that even the high tide and low tide cannot flush it out, Shafat. So it really is a serious problem. From time to time, it gets worse, and then after a couple of weeks, the natural flow of the water tends to flush it out. A lot of people have stopped eating fish completely from the harbor. If the fish in the harbor, it's for sport only. They rather make their way out to backline, that is out at sea, and target some stumpies and a few shad on the backline if they're looking for the pot shepherd.
Then you find, you know, people picking up dead fish and, you know, especially the big size, and coming and selling it to people. Is there any way or a telltale sign of when you're buying a fish, you know, no, this fish has been contaminated or it died of pollution? Can you make that out, Adam? You know, you're the expert.
You know, Shafat, when I look for fresh fish, I look at the eyes. If the eyes are looking nice and clear and not sunken in, then that's an indication that it's quite fresh. But if the fish has died through maybe lack of oxygen or pollution or whatever contaminant there is in the water, it could still look fresh. So it's really hard to say. So I'd advise not to buy fish from an unlicensed dealer. Rather go to a proper fish shop. You know the fish has been caught properly. Or even, you know, take up the sport yourself. There's no better way than to, you know, learn the sport, land some nice prize fish and take it home. And you know it's healthy, strong and pristine fish and kept well, you know, from the time it's caught till the time it reaches your freezer. It hasn't been lying around in the sun. You know, as soon as you catch a fish, you put it in your cooler box on ice. So you really look after it and prevent, you know, any decay or any bacteria, you know, in the fish. So I really advise against buying fish or crayfish or whatever it is from people on the side of the road, Shafat.
This question says, Shamsuddin, assalamu alaikum. Adam, why does the killer whale look like a oversized dolphin, but in black and white? Why they call it a whale instead of a big dolphin? You know what? I think Shamsuddin making some sense to me, Adam.
Yes, Shafat, they do look very similar, but I think it comes from the whale family, and it's got it looks so friendly and you know, cuddly, looks like a panda bear, looks like the shape of a dolphin. So it looks so friendly. But you must realize, Shafar, that these are animals, great creatures of the ocean that have to hunt and kill their prey to survive. And they've evolved really sophisticated methods of hunting where they move in packs and they work together. A few of them will go ahead and round up the prey and the others will come and attack it. So they're very intelligent creatures, and they breathe air like the southern right whale and even like the dolphin. But they are from the whale family, so it's called a killer whale, Shepard.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, because I think the dolphin does the same thing, breathes air. The whales do that, and they have this orca, the killer whale. And, you know, I saw footage of the same whale chasing a ski boat. I mean, do they do that out of naughtiness, you know, or they really want to catch those fishermen on the ski boat, Adam?
Yes, Shafar, I know exactly the video clip you're talking about. It's published on our fishing page, Fishing Durban, on Facebook, if you're interested to view it. And here you have these fishermen. They were off the bluff of Durban, and they were fishing, and then they saw this commotion on the water, and they started recording it. And they recorded such an amazing clip. So there were two adult orcas and a baby that were hunting this huge stingray. The stingray saw the boat and I think swam up to it for protection, you know, to find some sort of structure to try and hide from the orcas, and in the process bumped the boat, and the fishermen thought that they were being attacked, and then they continued filming and seeing these orcas virtually jumping out of the water to attack the stingray, and I think they managed to get it and slowly moved off with their prey and enjoyed their meal. But it was quite a sight to behold, and really something phenomenal to capture right off here, off our KZN coast. And these gentlemen have been kind enough to publish it on social medias for all of us to enjoy, Shafat.
Absolutely, Adam. And then, accidentally, has anyone caught this killer whale, Adam?
You know, Shafat, I've been fishing for many years, and we've seen whales come past the boat so many times, and very often we'll have our baits in the water. But not once have we experienced hooking a whale, and even dolphins for that matter, Shafat. You know, the dolphins, there's a little trick that fishermen use when they see a pod of dolphins. They race up to that shoal and without really disturbing them, try and cut the engines before they reach the shoal. And they cast a lure that's called a popper into the right. They try and aim for the front of the shoal, in the direction that the shoal is moving. And the fishermen have discovered that the tuna shoals actually move with the dolphins. So when you see the dolphins there, it's an indication that there's tuna below. And by throwing this popper out, and they make splashes in the water and commotion on the water, it entices the tuna to come and take the bait. And in all these experiences, people throwing the poppers out right in the front of the nose of the dolphins, not one dolphin has taken that popper. It's always the tuna. So the dolphin, I think, a lot more sophisticated with their sonar to try and understand what that bait is, and that it's not a real fish and they wouldn't touch it. But the tuna, out of instinct, sees the commotion of the lure and will come up and take the bait of it. So the dolphins and the whales, they have a way of avoiding the artificial bait. But the tuna and the other those kind of species, the ones that we are targeting, thankfully, are the ones that will take the lures, Shafat.
Well, Adam says that eloquently. They don't have artificial intelligence, those mammals. They have real intelligence, and sometimes they're more sharper than some human beings there. But alhamdulillah, beautiful, beautiful conversation with you, Adam. Do you have a recipe for us, an iftar recipe, Adam?
Yes, Shafat, I've combined iftar and our cold weather, so I'm sure you would love to have a lovely, delicious-tasting Ottoman-style lentil soup, Shafat. This is like halim, but the Turkish style. So we start with a large onion. You dice it up, and you add it to your pot with about 4 tablespoons of olive oil. Then you fry this up, you sauté it. You add 1 heaped teaspoon of flour and continue sautéing until it starts to turn brown. You add 1 teaspoon of salt and 1 liter of hot water. Then to this, you would add 1 cup of red lentils washed and dried, and continue to cook this until it's nearly done. And you take a stick blender and blend this all up together. Then you'd make a milk sauce to add to it. You take just over 1/2 a cup of milk, 1 egg yolk, and 1 tablespoon of lemon juice. Combine this thoroughly with a whisk and add it to the soup, but not cold. You take a little bit of the hot soup and you add it to the milk sauce, warm it up, and then you add this to the pot. You don't want it to split. And then you continue to cook that, and your soup is nearly done. You just need the garnish sauce. The garnish sauce, you use 1 tablespoon of butter, 4 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 teaspoons of dried mint, 1 teaspoon paprika, and 1 teaspoon of red chili flakes. You heat all this up. You cook it just a little bit, just for a few seconds, and you can pour this over the lentil soup without mixing it too much. Let this garnish float on the surface. So when you are serving, when you're dishing out, you can dish out as much soup as you want and just scoop out a little bit of the garnish for your bowl as well. Serve it piping hot with some lovely flat bread to break your fast this evening, Shafat.
Hey, Adam, come here. Let me hug you. Like a hug for you. You know why? Hey, you put Overport out of business. You put all the other halimos. You all say, Adam, we want to try your variation because, hey, you know, the same thing over and over. But you gave us something tops. Adam, I'm going to try it out. I'm going to try this thing out, and I'm going to let you know how it is. Your parting words this morning, Adam?
Yes, Shafad, I'd just love to wish everyone Ramzan Mubarak, remember us in your du'as, and make du'as for all the mahrooms and mahroomas that have passed away. Thanks for a lovely show, Shafad, and I hope that Ottoman-style lentil soup warms you up tonight.
Ameen. You're a great guy, having a great time with you, and you, your ibadah, your spirituality really resonates so beautifully on this platform. And, you know, alhamdulillah, I know you're not a fighter, you're a peacemaker. You make the peace among the people. So keep on doing the right thing, Adam. Have a mashallah beautiful day ahead. I'll talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam. Salams to you and the listeners.
Walaikum salam, Adam. And yes, hey, yeah, come here, Boniface. Yeah, what do you think of this? This Turkish Halim. Hey, I'm looking for that. Onions, olive oil, flour, salt, 1 liter hot water, red lentils, blended. And then you got your milk sauce, milk, egg, yolk, lemon, biscuit. And when you go, you put all this in the pot. And then you garnish your garnish sauce, your butter, your olive oil, your dried, all these things, man, dried chili flakes and pour that too, but don't overdo it. There's it, people, and have it with the Turkish bread, what type of bread they have. Well, we can just take one of our naans, lovely milk naan, and have it with that. Jazakallah khair to Adam for that, really adding value to the slot.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.